Welcome to the Access Astrology Podcast. I'm Arwen O'Neill, and I'm here with my good friend Allison Price, and we are coming to you from Vancouver, Canada.
Yes, we're going to be talking a little bit about the planetary movements, the ingresses. We're going to be discussing some of the moon phases and a couple of book reviews.
Indeed. And this is for the period from February 23rd through March 7th.
That's right.
2014.
And then we'll have our 360 topic, which is going to be how to start interpreting your chart.
Yeah. And we have an example chart.
We do.
Yeah. So that will be fun.
Yes.
And let's see, let's start out with the astrology for the next 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
On the 23rd, which is a Sunday, we have Sun conjunct Neptune. That is our first aspect. And the keywords that I've got for that are sensitive, dreamy, good for artistic endeavors, and appreciation. So that's sort of the positive side of the Sun-Neptune conjunction.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because the sun comes around every year and conjuncts the outers for a little bit, for like a week sort of thing, and then it's conjuncting Neptune.
Yep.
So that's also known as, and I'm just going off track already, that's also known as a heliacal rising. When the sun rises, conjunct a planet, they call it heliacal. And when it's Neptune, we were taught years ago that it has to do with aeroplanes.
It has to do with aeroplanes.
Yes.
What does that mean?
In the news.
Like, so don't fly?
People? Oh, no, just generally. You know,
okay.
Yeah.
So look for that.
There you go.
All right. Yeah, so then on the 25th, a couple days later, on Tuesday, we have Jupiter square Uranus.
Okay.
Uranus.
So that's really tightening up this T-square we've been doing.
Yeah, definitely. That is the ongoing square between Pluto and Uranus, which is getting pulled into a grand cross and a grand square at various times throughout the year.
Yes, so it really is the background story of the whole year, isn't it?
It really is, yeah. Mm. So this particular square is, keywords are a need for excitement, adventure, and fun, to feel rebellious, independent, and try new things. So that's, again, the more personal and positive side of that.
Yes.
Yeah. Got a little bit of a cold here, so.
Okay, no problem.
Then on the 27th, we have Mercury going direct, which is a nice change from the last 3 weeks, where it's been retrograde.
Yes, yes.
And it's been moving between Pisces and Aquarius in the retrograde, which is a bit of a rough transition, I think, for Mercury. It doesn't like to it doesn't like to go retrograde at all. But it, when it goes from an air sign to a water sign, it's a bit of a shocking change, I think.
Yes. So that will be the end of Mercury's first retrograde period for 2014.
Yep.
Yay!
Yay! And then on the 28th, the very next day, we've got Sun trine Jupiter, which is growth, expansiveness, new beginnings in business, education, goals, communication.
Good day. Two fire planets trining.
Yeah.
Inspirational.
Mm-hmm. Nothing wrong with that. And then on the 1st of March, we've got Mars going retrograde, which is a big.
That's the big news, isn't it, for retrogrades this year?
Yeah.
I mean, all the planets retrograde every year, except the Sun and Moon. And in 2014, there's always a planet retrograde, because I was looking at it the other day. Mm-hmm. But the Mars retrograde is the important one, because it only happens every 2 years.
Yeah. And last time it was 2012, and it was in Virgo.
Yes.
And now it is not.
Now it's in Libra.
Yes.
So Mars is going to be retrograde from the 27th degree of Libra back to the 9th. So it's staying in Libra for the full 80 days.
Yes.
And if you've got planets in Libra, you're really going to feel this Mars retrograde now, because you're going to get the three hit to it. And if you have a Sun in Libra, for sure, such as people who live in my house and have five planets in Libra, they're going to get a full whammy of this Mars retrograde period of three hits.
I've only got three planets in Libra, so I should be fine.
Yes. So if you have Mars in Libra, you're going to get a triple return this year.
My mother has Mars in Libra.
Oh, indeed. And therefore, she will be experiencing, probably for the first time in 12 years, this Mars triple return. A return is when a planet comes back to the same place it is in your natal chart.
Yeah.
And when Mars does a retrograde, it will give you three hits to that return. So you get three chances to get it right. We like to be positive, right?
Yeah, right. Wow.
So that's continuing on until May the 19th. So it's a long haul for Mars to be in Libra.
Yeah.
And Mars is not particularly comfortable in Libra because it's opposite Aries, right? So it's in detriment, but still.
Yeah. Wow. So that's happening.
Yeah.
But we also have Saturn going retrograde the very next day. So
is that an upside?
No.
It's going to be a double whammy retrograde if the two malefics going retrograde.
Yeah. So Saturn retrograde is...
Saturn retrograde again. It happens every year.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Saturn's in Scorpio and...
Yeah. And it'll be in Scorpio for a bit.
Rinse, repeat, and continue. Yes.
Exactly. And on the very same day, we've got Saturn square Mars. Or no, sorry, Venus square Mars. Venus square Mars is tension in relationships, possible fireworks between the sexes.
Yes. And with Mars stationing there as well, that's not going to make things much better.
Nope.
But this Mars retrograde is interesting because Mars is like our planet where our energy is.
Yeah.
And when it's retrograde, there's not that energy people have. That get up and go is gone.
Yeah.
So for a period, one has time to, we'd like to say reflect, but it's maybe a time to, even if it's in one of your physical houses, to, if you're an athlete, to take it easy, to rest up, to rebuild.
Right. Instead of doing what might be the instinctive thing, try harder and harder. Yeah.
So it depends really what you're trying to do during this period, but it's not going to be good for energy.
Good time to glide, maybe.
Mm, so I'm not sure if the Olympics will be finished by then, I suppose. Yeah. So, difficult one.
Yeah.
But again, if you've got planets in Libra, it will affect you more than everybody else. So nothing to worry about.
Yeah. On the 5th, which is a Wednesday, we have Venus moving into Aquarius.
Okay.
And Jupiter moving direct. So... one planet coming out of retrograde. Another, in addition to Mercury the week before. So Jupiter going direct and Venus going into Aquarius. Venus in Aquarius tends to be aloof, detached, and cool. Your interactions might be more intellectual and friendly and a bit different and a bit quirky.
Mm, mm, mm.
Yeah.
And that Jupiter direct, that's got to be good news.
I would think. It's a big old giant. But, yeah.
I'm not sure if that's Jupiter's last direct pass coming out of Cancer now, because it's going to be in Leo by, what, August?
Sometime towards the end of the year,
yeah. So it's moving direct again, and it'll pick up some speed, and things will start moving again.
Yeah.
So growth is a key word for Jupiter. So growth will now be able to get a bit of traction, I think. And in Cancer, I would want to say the housing market, but because I'm not in it myself, I'm not following it closely anymore like I used to in the good old days. But yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Excellent. Something to look forward to. Well, that is what the planets are doing. What is the moon doing?
Ah, well, as I say, it's always moving. So we have a new moon on the 1st of March.
Excellent.
It's the same day that Mars is stationing and retrograding. So... okay, it's kind of interesting. The new moon will actually be at 10 degrees Pisces. So whichever house 10 degrees Pisces occurs for you in your chart.
That would be the 5th house, I think.
Okay. Well, whichever house 10 Pisces occurs in your chart would be the place where you would do, as I've spoken before, this new moon wishing, in line with the house where the new moon occurs. So if we knew what house it was, such as I have it, I believe in my... is it... is either 8 or 9? I can't recall now. But anyway, it's going to be... yeah, it'd be 8. So you can ask for... do some wishing and some affirmations towards the nature of that house, such as 8th house. I don't know. Revisiting, researching and sorting things out there. And you would have been, what, 4th house, I would assume.
4th house. I guess so. Yeah.
So anyway, where the new moon occurs each month, it moves up each month, as we've said before.
Yeah.
And so new moon in Pisces. Should be good. We're getting towards the end of the year now. The sun's getting right towards the end of the zodiac. And that'll be our last new moon in this cycle and before the sun moves into Aries next.
Yeah.
So that's the new moon. That's occurring on the 1st of March, which is, as I said, when Mars is stationing retrograde. And then I do not know. And that's about all I've got to say for the moon this time, actually.
Okay.
Oh, here we are. We've got the first quarter's on Saturday, the 8th of March.
Oh, okay, yeah, that's right at the end of our 2 weeks. That's
yes.
Excellent.
So there it is, going to be the first quarter. So we've got a moon in the dark. It's a bit more subdued. Not so pushy. You can't see it so clearly. And yeah, it's a cycle. The moon's always the cycles.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Well, there we are with the moon phases and the planets.
Yes.
So our Astrology 360 topic today,
yes,
is an interesting one. We are going to be going through an example chart, mm-hmm, and just sort of where to begin when you first look at someone's chart, if you're a consulting astrologer or if you are studying your own chart, and or your friends and loved ones and potential loved ones or what have you. And then where do you begin with all the glyphs and the wheels and the lines and blah?
Yeah.
And what's a good way to approach it?
A good way to approach it. Yeah. I'm going to take a step back a little bit there.
Hmm.
When you get a chart, and I'm going to be talking a little bit about how to start with a chart interpretation, the first thing you really need to do is ascertain where did this information come from.
Right. Accuracy is vital.
Yeah, so we know we've got this chart. We have our example chart. It's a man we both know. And we have a time here of 6:45 a.m. And my first question is, where does that time come from?
Hmm.
Because astrologers really do need to have a good time. But if they don't have a good time, they need to know they've got a weak time as well.
Yeah.
So a good time is, the time you're going for is the actual time of the first inhalation of breath,
right,
of the baby when it's born. Because that's when it's taking in the potentials of the universe.
Right.
So this actually is incredibly difficult to, unless you're there paying attention, you might miss it. And sometimes the child is not exactly fully expelled before it will breathe. So you have to know what you're looking for.
Right. Here's an interesting thing, which is kind of a, it's kind of a tangent, but it's an interesting one. And it illustrates an interesting point.
Yes.
My grandmother, who is, the fount from which my astrological knowledge
indeed
sprung,
flows.
she has always told this story. When she was born, and she obviously learned this from her parents and whatnot, but when she was born, she didn't breathe at first so the doctors, they were, as she says, holding her up by her feet and, dipping her in cold water and smacking her on,
massaging.
Mm-hmm. And trying to, and this is, she's my grandmother, so we're not talking, modern science. We're talking, whatever happened in the
last century.
In the old times, they were getting a little worried. She didn't breathe for quite a while. Like, it was actually, scary. And just long enough for her ascendant to move from Pisces into Aries. So she was born with Aries rising, and she fully thinks that this was purposeful on her part.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because the thing is, when a child is actually born and they're still connected by the umbilical cord, they do not need to breathe by themselves because they're still getting the actual oxygen coming
through. She says it was
through
a good 20 minutes.
And how interesting is that? Yeah. So there you are.
Exactly.
That is what you're wanting, the potentials when they breathe in that first breath.
Yeah.
So it's not when the baby's head crowns or it's delivered. That's not, if you want the good times, you need the first breath times.
Yeah. And not to get too anal and Virgo about it, but it's true. You don't want the time when the nurse went on her break and then did a batch of them. So a lot of the time, if you get a, right on the hour or right on the half an hour, you might be suspicious of it because that might not have been
always
really exact.
You would be, if someone comes with 5 p.m., the time's wrong. It's probably near enough. But you need to explore it further with the person.
Yeah.
Where did this time come from? Who remembered what happened?
Anyone in the room that can actually,
Was it a cesarean? Because then it's 10 minutes either way. But if they don't know, you need to know they don't know as well. That's the point. If they say sometime in the afternoon, the astrologer will adjust for that to do the interpretation properly. So that is always your first question.
Yeah, absolutely. And this one we know because it was... was written down in the baby book.
It was written down in the baby book, so that is what we call a AA birth time, which is great when we can go ahead and use that.
Yeah.
So having then got up the fact that the chart is correct in the first place, we would then cast the chart, make sure that the sun is in the correct position. This is a birth of 6:45 a.m. So we know the sun has to be on the eastern side, somewhere in the 6 o'clock mark.
Mm-hmm.
And not over there, that's the PM, and you can make those mistakes as well. So in this particular chart, we have...
Did you say 6 o'clock, Mark?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, I thought you were talking like in a clock formation. Like with
this is it. The ascendant is 6 a.m.
Right.
The midheaven is noon.
Yes, it's very confusing when you first start studying astrology.
These things.
Because you think of a clock.
That's right. But if you realize that this is actually rising here on the east, a birth at 6:45 a.m., the sun's going to be on the left.
Yeah. It's the 9 o'clock spot if you're looking at a clock.
Yeah, okay. But we're going to put a diagram of this particular chart on the site so you can follow along with what we're talking about.
Yeah.
So over here on the left-hand side, we have the 25 degrees, 33 minutes of Libra rising. Mm-hmm. That's the ascendant. And you can see that the sun is just slightly below the horizon line. So we know dawn had not actually broken on this day. It was about to. The sun was eminently going to rise, which is great. And to be honest, this was someone born in 1964, so we're talking a few years ago now. Mm-hmm. And back in those days, most charts have the sun on the east because that's when the mother finally delivered.
Mm-hmm.
As the dawn broke, nature allowed it to be born into the day.
Yeah.
Whereas these days, most kids coming through that have been born since the year 2000 have their sun up near the midheaven because they are induced by the doctors during the day. So you don't get kids these days with suns down in the lower half.
Huh.
They're all at the top thinking they're entitled.
Right. That is fascinating. No, that is truly fascinating, especially in the Western world where children
where we are living.
We have a lot more only children and a lot more smaller families. So
yes.
One or two kids, each of them will certainly be more entitled feeling than
because it's near the midheaven so often.
Family.
So often.
That's
you hardly ever come across a chart of anyone born after the year 2000 where the sun is on the IC.
Really?
That doesn't
is amazing.
Happen anymore.
That is really interesting.
Mm.
Huh.
So, by the way.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's a great thing to know.
Yeah, so what we have with this particular chart, we have the sun is just about to rise and Mercury is next to it, just slightly below there in Scorpio. And we can see the sun is conjunct Mercury. A conjunction is where they are within 8 degrees of each other.
Mm-hmm.
So we know the sun is conjunct Mercury, which is often the case because Mercury is an inner planet.
Yeah.
It very often travels with the sun.
So and the sun is almost conjunct to the rising or not quite? There are two different signs, but are they conjunct?
Is the sun conjunct the ascendant?
Hmm.
Yes.
Ah, interesting. So it's an out of sign conjunction.
Yeah.
So
you'd say the sun is rising because it's conjunct the ascendant.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So the sun is rising, Mercury is next up. Then in the first house, we have Neptune in Scorpio.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly, that is a generational placement.
Mm-hmm.
Neptune has been in Scorpio for 14-odd years by this stage.
Yeah.
But because in this particular person's chart, Neptune has arisen in the first house, it becomes personal for them.
Right. Because the first house is the house of the identity.
That's right.
Yeah.
So already we've got an outer planet, that is Neptune, being prominent to
mm-hmm.
us. Because you start off when you're doing a chart interpretation looking at the ascendant.
Yeah.
What's the sign? What planets are in the first house? And where's the sign ruler?
Mm-hmm.
We're going to get to that.
Okay.
So first off the bat, we've got three planets in the first house, which is unusual anyway, because there's only 10 and there's 12 houses. But
right. Here
we have, this guy's got three in the first house. So we'll look at those in depth in a little bit. And they're all in Scorpio.
Yeah.
Okay. This man is sun in Scorpio.
All right.
Now, because the ascendant is Libra, we then look to Venus, because Venus rules Libra. So Venus becomes the chart ruler for this guy.
Mm-hmm.
So in his chart, Venus is in Virgo in the 11th house.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to say to ourselves, well, how well is Venus placed? Is it a strong Venus or is it a weak Venus?
Mm.
And immediately, by looking at the chart, you can see that Venus is there, conjunct Pluto. That will need discussion in a moment. It's widely conjunct Uranus. I wouldn't call that a strict conjunction. But all three are in Virgo.
Mm-hmm.
This man was born when Uranus was conjunct Pluto in Virgo, which was the start of this big square we're dealing with at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
But again, what we have is an emphasis on the 11th house, an emphasis on Virgo. And we've only just started. So we've got a first house prominence and an 11th house prominence.
Mm-hmm.
Are you with me all?
I am totally. This
is
good. Great.
So this is where you start. You go straight into the ascendant. That is the entrance to a chart.
Yeah.
I would also, at this stage, before I go any further, want to know what else is aspecting the ascendant directly.
Mm-hmm.
And if I look down here at my handy-dandy aspectarium,
yes,
I can see that we do have aspects to the ascendant which will modify this chart for him. He's got the moon is trine the ascendant, bringing the mother and the moon and things in. The sun is conjunct, we know that. Also now we've got Mars's sextile. Now that's quite nice in a man's chart. It's giving that masculine energy, but with a sextile.
Mm.
So it's there if he needs it, but
right.
It's not necessarily aggressive.
It's not overpowering. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice.
And then we have Saturn is trining.
Mm.
So Saturn is now trining here's a sentence as well. So we've got the Moon and Saturn, which are, and when they come together, you talk about the parents. It's the mother-father combination trining his ascendant, mm-hmm. totally, which is the best aspect you can have to him. Okay.
That's wonderful.
We move slightly further along and we get that I see that the North Node is also trining his ascendant. This is huge. This shows that it's a positive future for him, right? Huh. And the North Node. And if the North Node is trining, we know the South Node must be sextiling.
Right.
So where he came from, we're also cool with that. Because the North Node is where you're going and the South Node is where you come from.
Excellent.
How are we doing?
That's great.
Now, it's difficult because I'm just talking about it, but the diagram will be on the site.
When we say aspectarian too, we mean the little...
The little triangular piece at the bottom.
We'll have notes on that.
So, but what I know already is that his ascendant is picking up a trine from the Moon. Now, the Moon is up there in the 8th house, in the 9th house in Cancer. We'll get to that. Saturn is down here in the 4th house in Aquarius.
Uh-huh.
Trining, and therefore I know that the Moon and Saturn are trining each other and they're forming a grand trine to his ascendant.
Right.
So over and above everything else that's going on in this chart, this parental thing is huge for this man. Okay. Now that grand trine between the Moon and Saturn is also trining to the Sun, even though it's a dissociate grand trine. Let me know if we can continue. And I coloured it in blue, which I'll probably put up on this way. And you can see that as well, that the Sun in your chart is who you are. It's your soul. It's your heart. It's the pumping, your pumping heart. And his whole life is based upon this parental relationship he has. So after we've considered the full complex of the ascendant, which is the ruler of the ascendant, which we know is Venus, all aspects to the ascendant from the other planets and any planets in the first house, which will modify this Libra ascendant, we're getting a clear picture of which planets are coming forward and which they want to be discussed with us. Right. And in this case, our list will so far include Venus as the chart ruler, the Moon because it's trining in, Saturn because it's trining to the ascendant, we've got the Sun, Mercury and Neptune in the first house, and Mars is trying to make it in there with a little bit of a sextile.
Mm-hmm. That's great. That gives you something to focus on, so it's not just all the planets all
exactly.
equally.
Because not all planets are created equal.
Right.
And my Sun may be stronger than your Sun, or my Moon may be stronger than your Moon,
right.
and that's why you have to assess the planetary strength within each chart, and each chart is different.
Yeah.
And the skill really is to know what to look for. And I like to say that astrology is about joining the dots like we did in the constellations.
Definitely.
Oh, here's five dots. That's a lion. I mean, it could have been anything, but it's a lion.
Right.
And in astrology, you need to know what's important and what to ignore.
Yeah. Excellent.
So, yeah. So during our very first pass, which is what is called the ascendant complex that we've just looked at, some planets have immediately gone into the background and they are Pluto, Uranus, Jupiter, Eris. We're not even going to discuss Chiron. And yeah, that's about it.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got half the team's coming forward and the other half's moving backwards, as though they're stepping forward to us.
Excellent.
My next step, having looked at the actual ascendant and its complex, is to go and look at Venus in closer attention towards Venus, because Venus is strong, because Venus is the chart ruler.
Mm-hmm.
Now his Venus is in Virgo, which means it's in fall, so it's not going to be find it very easy to express its love.
Mm.
And it can sometimes be incredibly critical when it's in Virgo to the love interest.
Mm.
So you need a haircut, your eyebrows are too long, whatever it is. And you're going to have this constant grooming of the mate.
Right.
When Venus is in Virgo, which is kind
of
interesting.
It's very picturesque way of saying.
Yeah.
I'm picturing the birds, you know, that they groom each other's heads.
And, that's right. I'm thinking, this feather's too long. Let's have that off and off it goes. But there's this continuous feeling towards that. So we would look at Venus in more detail now. We'd say Venus is now in the 11th house. That's the house of groups, associations, humanity,
right.
Fairness across all these strong things that come across. We know that Venus is conjunct Pluto, and that's a powerful combination.
Mm-hmm.
We spoke about it last week when it was part of the Valentine's combination.
Yeah.
When Venus and Pluto come together, it's love and sex are coming together.
Right.
And really you can reach your highest possible abilities in your romance when those two come together.
But not when it's in Virgo.
Well,
they are there, and maybe your routine will be critiqued or whatever it is. You're not tickling my back the right way, you know.
Striving for perfection in those things.
Yes. But first off, when we consider that Venus is tightly conjunct the Pluto, we want to say, well, Pluto's the ruler of Scorpio. Haven't we heard that word already? Mm. And glory be, yes, we have, because the Sun, Mercury and Neptune are all in Scorpio. Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's almost a mutual reception, but not.
We do have a mutual reception. Mm. We will get to that.
Okay.
What we're saying is that this Pluto that's now conjunct the chart ruler and therefore saying, hey, look at me, is also disposing all the three planets in his first house. So this man is strongly Scorpio, not just because his Sun is there, because the Sun, Mercury and Neptune is there and Pluto conjuncts the chart ruler. Scorpio is strong and it's Scorpio on the Pluto side, not the Mars side.
Okay, got it.
So all of those things of deep,
penetrating,
yes, and wanting to explore the depths of whomever or interrogate people are definitely going to be part of this man's complex. Mm-hmm. Even though, look how
Libra's rising.
We think, oh, Libra's rising, how nice.
How pleasant, how charming.
Yeah, easygoing, social, yes. But then, straight away, we've got this strength of Scorpio, and it's reinforced that those three there are totally reinforced by that Pluto conjunct the Venus, so that cannot be ignored.
Interesting.
I would look at Venus slightly further now and want to know what other aspects does this Venus have? And it has a few, okay. There's a semi-square to Mercury. I'll ignore that for now because that's a minor aspect. A semi-sextile to Mars. But there's a trine to Jupiter. Now, that's interesting. And it's a tight one. It's 0 degrees, 25 minutes. That's a tight one.
Yeah.
It's not the tightest aspect. But when you've got Venus and Jupiter trining, this is a good thing. Mm-hmm. You've got the two benefics, the lesser benefic, the greater benefic, in the best aspect possible, which is the trine. And if I look here in the chart, I will see, oh, yes, Jupiter's over here in the eighth house. Mm. Who rules the eighth house? Pluto is the natural house of Scorpio. It's all the same message coming through for this man.
Right.
It's deep, it's penetrating, life is taken seriously. We might be very delightful and socially adept because of Libra, but that Scorpio is definitely there. It's a total strong point to mention. And you can see clearly that blue line across there, across the top, from the Venus to the Jupiter is strong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
Do you think? Yes?
Yeah.
Next up, we have that the Venus is actually squaring the North Node and the South Node. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't actually draw the lines onto nodes because they're points, not planets. Planets have energy, so I only draw the lines to the planets.
Okay.
And what you find is that if a planet squares both the North and the South, and I spoke before that the North Node is where your future, where you're going, what you're supposed to be doing, and your South Node is where you're coming from. The South Node also indicates knowledge and baggage you brought forward from your last incarnation, if you're into that type of thing.
Sure.
But it's what you're bringing with you into this life.
Yeah.
Maybe this guy's got many other things that he's bringing with him that are not necessarily immediately known. But when a planet is squaring, it's totally triggering that axis. It means that the past and the future are more in balance than you would have normally.
Right.
Because, say, for instance, you have, like, the Moon is conjunct the North Node. It is strongly focusing there.
Yeah.
But Venus has got a balance.
Right.
It's the chart ruler. This is an important planet. And here we have it now squaring his nodal axis. So where he's coming from and where he's going to are probably going to be more authentic than we would have expected.
Interesting.
He doesn't live in the past, and yet he doesn't look to the future all the time. He's got the balance through his chart ruler.
Interesting. That is very interesting because you just anecdotally, I know of many people who very much live, you know, in one or the other, in the past or in the future. And I'm sure that we can all think of examples right off the top of our heads of people who absolutely are always talking about their plans and, you know, this is going to happen and this is going to happen and I need to such and such. Or people who are just, you know, constantly
talking about their glory days. It's gone. And
even if that was just 2 weeks ago, but always, you know, looking back. And that is very interesting.
There's a context then to your actual nodes, and one will be stronger than the other, such as in this case, we haven't quite got there, but the Moon is conjunct the North Node. So he will constantly be looking to the future emotionally.
Yeah.
For a brighter future emotionally, right?
Interesting.
And feel that the future will be better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. So And that's really looking at Venus in quite a deep way. I would also at this stage want to know which other houses Venus is ruling apart from the first house.
Right, so the house with Taurus on the cusp.
Yes, so the house with Taurus on the cusp is the eighth house. Mm-hmm. Where have we heard this before?
Jupiter.
Jupiter's there, and it's the natural house of Scorpio.
Right.
Okay, so Venus is now also ruling those eighth house issues.
Mm-hmm.
But Venus has a third house in this chart. It's ruling the 12th.
Right, it's on the... Yes, exactly. Libra.
Because Libra's on the cusp of the 12th house and the first house.
Right.
So this guy's chart ruler is standing up and saying, hey, look at me. I'm doing all these things. I'm ruling three houses. Okay?
And that's tough. That's
yes. Probably. I'm conjunct Pluto. Pluto's the sun ruler. And it's a total message right there. Okay, how... Do you see where I'm going?
I do. I love this. This is fascinating.
Is this how you would have opened?
Well, I, not being a consulting astrologer, more of a research astrologer myself, I don't read other people's charts for them. I sort of read them for my own selfish benefit and fun and research. And, I tend to sort of either read people's charts in combinations, collections of for example, generational studies of people that have the same... signatures, and then sort of lumping them together, or I just look at my friends and relatives' charts and just kind of pore over them for curiosity. So I've never actually developed my own sort of approach to the chart. So this is very interesting from that perspective.
Yes, because doing it this way, by focusing on the ascendant and the chart ruler to start with as the very beginning first steps, you immediately bring out the main players in your play.
Definitely.
Because there's an old analogy that take an astrology reading back to the theatre, and you say that the planets are the actors in the play. So you've got leading actors, leading men and leading ladies, and these are your prominent planets like the Venus and the Pluto. And then you have your backup cast and your chorus in the background, which we haven't got to yet.
Yeah.
The Saturn
supporting
the,
cast. Yeah. Totally.
So you may have like at the Oscars, you've got a leading lady, and then you have what is it, a supporting lady?
That's supporting actress.
Supporting actress. Yeah. You've got the leading actress in a play, in a movie, and then the supporting actress. And this is what you've got in astrology charts as well. You've got layers of importance in the planets.
Yeah, definitely.
And it's crucial to understand which planets are important and which you can ignore.
Yeah.
Because you do not have to give intensity to every single planet in the chart. There's no message there for you. The message is in the role and the words being spoken by the leading lady and the leading man.
Right. And in some cases, a supporting character can just like in the movies, they can just have one major scene where they really sort of, steal a show, and then that's all they're... Dame Judi Dench in Shakespeare in Love, for example. She won the Oscar for Best Supporting Actress for that, and she was on screen, I think, for 7 minutes. So sometimes you have that, and that's maybe in one sphere of your life where that planet is very active. For example, maybe it's in the ninth house and something.
Yeah, exactly. So you don't have to concern yourself with those secondary people or the backup chorus or those who don't even have a line in your chart.
Yeah. You can focus on the major
what's
characters first.
And then what's important.
Yeah, exactly.
And you take this into the forecasting as well. What's important? Right. Venus is important for this man.
Yeah.
Pluto is important. Pay attention to when they come conjunctions.
Right.
Because this is really what's important to him, the love and the connection and all the rest of it.
Mm-hmm.
Those are important things for him, right? The fact that Venus is ruling the 1st, the 8th and the 12th.
Yeah.
These are powerful houses.
All the water houses.
They're the hidden houses. It's supporting the Scorpio message that we may not have originally thought of because he's got Libra rising. Oh, how nice is that?
Yeah.
Right?
Exactly.
So
Libra rising is just a front. It's just a...
It definitely is a front, and it's a very sophisticated front.
Mm.
It's smooth, it's adaptable, it's social, it can move through society.
Mm-hmm.
But there's more to it.
Mm-hmm.
There's definitely more to it because of all the Scorpio going on behind.
Right.
And I've written my notes here on the side where I said Venus is the chart ruler, most important thing.
Mm-hmm.
Next up on my list of important planets, just by the way, without even going into the complexes, is that Venus is Oriental. That's one of my hobby horses.
Right.
Venus Oriental, smooth talking coming forward. Mm-hmm. Okay, and it's a wide... gap from the sun, so he's this oriental planet has risen over 2 hours before the sun did. Mm-hmm. Therefore, it's got a lot of time to establish itself in this chart.
Right.
Okay.
Got it.
Other points to mention here, we have the moon is in Dignity in Cancer. We mentioned the moon because it's part of the trine to the sun and to the ascendant and part of the grand trine with Saturn.
Yeah.
But the moon is also in Cancer. So this moon is quite strong.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. But if you look at the chart already, you can see it's got two trines to it. And this that orange one is a sesquiquadrant, which is a minor one. But what we're saying is there are no hard aspects to the moon. So the moon's pretty easygoing. There's really not there's no bitch going on there. Right? It's in Cancer. It's in the ninth house. It'll be good.
All right.
And the lunar phase is disseminating. It's gone past the full and it's moving into the disseminating, which is the phase where the person is spreading knowledge and seeding for the next season.
Interesting.
So they're out there spreading and quite happy to mix and mingle, as it were. This is not the loner chart. Right. It's a mingler.
Mm. Interesting. And that's in contrast, I think, with we had talked, I believe it was last week or the week before, about the new moon and how that's different.
Entirely.
Yeah.
So your lunar phase at birth is important, and then this particular chart is disseminating. Another planet in Dignity is actually Saturn.
Hmm.
It's in Aquarius, which is the traditional ruler. So it's in its own sign. It's retrograde, but that doesn't matter because it's part of this grand trine.
Mm-hmm.
No, I mean, this is like huge. It's in full colour. A grand trine is huge news in anybody's chart.
Mm-hmm.
Moon, Sun, Saturn. This is huge. There's also the second one there to the ascendant. It's important.
Yeah.
Easygoing parental. Again, parental. You get it?
Yeah.
Solid. He knows where he's coming from, this guy. Mm. Okay. Saturn's in the fourth.
Yeah.
And then I would move on to other things. I would make a note of this. There's a mutual reception in his chart, okay, between Mercury and Pluto. And what that means is that Pluto is in Mercury's sign of Virgo, and Mercury is in Pluto's sign of Scorpio.
Ah, yes.
So if we consider the dispositor tree, let's just keep moving.
Indeed,
right?
Indeed, yes. We will have a scan of this up on the site.
Because I usually take, where am I? I've lost my thread here. I would usually have Mars as the ruler. In my dispositor tree, I only use traditional rulers. So what we've got is a different situation. We've got Pluto is actually in the Virgo, and then the Mercury is disposing it in Virgo.
Mm.
Because we used only traditional rulers. So what we have is Mars is in Leo at the top. Have I talking at the right chart? Yeah. God. Yes, there's the two, right? Mars also is the mutual reception with the Sun. Mars is in Leo, the Sun is in Scorpio. They're in mutual reception.
Right, wow.
Okay.
That's a double mutual reception.
That's right.
Interesting.
So this is occurring at the top of his dispositor tree because they are traditional rulerships, whereas the Pluto is not traditional.
Yeah.
That's why it's not dropped, it's not on the tree. So what we have at the top of his tree is Mars is in Leo, making a mutual reception to the Sun, and they're on the top line, so they're as important as each other, dispositor tree-wise.
Fantastic.
And what you can then see from the tree is that below this comes the Mercury and Scorpio, Neptune, and on it goes down, and all the other planets virtually are coming below the Mars.
Hmm.
Okay. We have, this is Mercury here because it has three planets below it. It is known as a gateway planet.
Oh.
Everything has got to be funneled back up.
Okay.
To the Mercury, okay. So what we have is the Sun, Moon, the Sun, Mars, Leo, Scorpio business going on. That's his main tree.
Mm-hmm.
This is what people are going to see.
Right.
But over here we also have these two separate dignities. We've got Moon in Cancer, Saturn in Aquarius. And again, when those two come together, it's parental.
Right.
So they're standing solidly alone on the top level.
Hmm. Neat. That's great.
Am I going off at a tangent? Anyway, I'm
no,
trying to
I love
keep it
that.
All in one go.
Looking at this little tree, it's all hand-drawn. It's great.
Yeah, well, it's got to be, right? And there's your chart ruler in the middle.
Yeah.
Not as prominent because Mars is taking quite a dominant role in the dispositor tree.
Mm-hmm.
This is what we would call a singleton in planet rulership. He's got three trees. 1, 2, 3.
All right.
Okay, so it's a combination, but it's mainly the Mars. It's Team Mars. And then these two stand alone. The cheese stands alone, as they say, right?
They do.
They do say that, don't they?
They do say that.
Okay, so I've picked up a few mutual receptions that I've mentioned that. We've mentioned the grand trines. I also now just want to mention his two other major aspect patterns, which are these two T-squares he's got.
Okay.
And the first one is Mars opposition Saturn. It's the red ones here, squaring the Jupiter.
Right.
Okay, so that is a fixed T square. That's going to add some resistance to him. He's not just going to roll over for people. So that's a pretty strong one. And then we have a second T square over here, which is Neptune opposition Jupiter squaring Mars. Now, when you're interpreting T squares, the energy of the two opposition planets go out through the squaring planet. So he's going to have here, Mars is in the 10th house, whatever his career is, which I don't even know what he does. He's going to put his energy and effort and expend energy on that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Putting himself forward in the Jupiter Neptunian way into the career in the public domain.
All right.
But that's a different thing. Can you see to all what we've spoken about all along?
Yeah.
Up until that, we've got this different layer coming through. Neptune, Jupiter, both through Pisces. There's a bit of something going on there. And then it's both coming out through this Mars.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right.
Yeah.
And then this T-square here, we have Saturn opposing Mars. A little bit of a difficult one, perhaps. Both squaring Jupiter.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I would have to maybe think about this a little bit longer to have some more to say about that. But Saturn's in the 4th, Mars is in the 10th. These are both angular, they're both masculine. You know, there's going to be some backbone to this man that you won't immediately see.
Right.
Because you won't, first you'll see the Libra, then you'll see the Scorpio business going on. But below all this, there's this T-square. And there's two T-squares and the Grand Trine. It's a dissociate. So anyway. You're with me so far?
I am with you, yeah.
I hope I'm not going too fast.
No, it's great.
I also break the chart down into the quadrants and I count up only the visible planets.
Oh, yeah.
And everything's in balance, so I wouldn't discuss that further. But then I would also do an elemental and mode breakdown of the planets. So there's only 7 planets, Sun to Saturn.
Mm-hmm.
And I would count up how many this, how many that, how many the other. And what we find is that fixed, he has 5 in fixed. There's only 7. He's
my goodness.
Very fixed, very strong, very stubborn.
Yes.
Won't budge, doesn't want change. Things must remain the same.
Okay.
Solidly 5 out of 7. This is huge for this guy. And flexibility is not a part of it. If we then look at it the other way on the elemental side, it seems to be pretty balanced. He's got the 3 in water. That is a slight emphasis.
Mm.
But if you look at the negative as opposed to the positive, we've got 5 in the negative and 2 in the positive. And I really shouldn't be saying negative and positive. I'm supposed to be saying
masculine
passive
and feminine.
And, passive and active. So with 5 in the passive and a 5 in the fixed, he's going to want to tend to not change things. Let's be passive, let it happen. And only when circumstances force him into a corner will he then make a move and change things in his life that he feels aren't working.
I see.
And this is the sort of person who will actually put up with things that are not working for the same, for the sense of stability.
Right. That makes sense.
So giving some broad strokes to the chart, that's where I would go to start with. I also pay attention to the part of fortune, which is here in the 4th house, family, conjunct the Saturn, that has to be the father when it's in the 4th house indication.
Mm-hmm.
It indicates solid foundations, that wherever he came from, it was a fortunate position for him.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's conjunct Saturn, so that's going to be sort of, and it's disposed by Saturn, so Saturn really is where his fortune's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
Saturnian things.
Interesting.
Okay.
Yeah. Excellent.
Now, have you got any comments about what I've said? Because you know this person better than I do.
Well, yes, I do. And we can reveal who it is. We are not being secretive. This is our producer and my partner in life, Roger. and yes, he is indeed a very Scorpio.
Yes.
With a very charming facade.
Yes, the perception is the Libra. The Libra is the perception.
Yeah. And it's true, he has friends of all different types.
It's strong, it's huge, it's important.
Yeah, and it's funny because I'm much more of an introvert than he is. And when we first met, he had so many friends and all sorts of different types of friends. And I was boggled by this. And every time, you know, we would be hanging out and someone would call up and just out of the blue, someone he hadn't spoken with in a couple of years maybe, and just the conversation would be like nothing had changed. It was just
Like they, pick up from where they left off.
And if I don't talk to someone for 2 years, I don't even think of them as a friend anymore. Almost, which sounds horrible. It sounds like I'm a terrible person. That's
because you don't have this strong 11th house, right?
Well, I kind of do, but yeah.
We're looking at each other. It's very Virgo. But if I think back to how did we come to start doing this podcast in the first place, Arwen? Right.
Well, exactly. He, it was his influence telling me, to start with, we had met through Astrology Vancouver meetup group, which was just basically the two of us.
Yes.
And we were sitting there chatting away and going, this is great that we're the only two astrologers in Vancouver that want to meet. Right. And then we discovered we live in the same building. What are the chances of that?
It's I know.
Astronomical, or perhaps I don't even know another word that means like super duper unlikely. It's astronomically, things are pretty likely, it turns out. But after we'd met a few times, I had been complaining about how I, can't find very many great astrology podcasts to listen to. And listeners, you may have recommendations if I plant the seed out there. There are certainly several good ones, but there is a dearth, let's say.
Yeah.
And so I was saying this to Roger, and he said, you should do a podcast. And I said, no. Very Virgo answer. No, I can't do that. Are you crazy? What are you thinking? And he says, well, just mention it to Allison. So I did. Here we are.
And here we are grouping and broadcasting. Yep. And who'd even thought it possible?
Exactly.
It's because, as we say, we really hardly know each other. Yeah. But I mean,
But yeah, exactly. And it's funny because, as you say, it's this charming facade. Oh, why don't you do a part? Like very, very just charming, like little mentioning it. But then, the minute that you meet some resistance, which in my case was, maybe you could say token resistance or, silly hands up, no, I couldn't possibly sort of thing. But this is what Virgo's, my form of Virgo does. It's, this flailing, oh no, not me, I don't, thing. But then he became very insistent.
You see, for Libra is a cardinal sign. You must never forget that those are the leaders of the horoscope.
Right. They're not just this sort of Aphrodite, charming, beautiful, lovely, passive thing.
She uses all her wiles to get what she wants.
Oh, yeah. If you read the mythology, she could be quite the little...
Yeah. And recently we had cause to be out socially together, didn't we? And
we did.
This Libra triggered my husband's chart as well because of his Libra planet.
Right.
And it's just quite simple.
We're like peas in a pod.
Indeed. Yes. And there was, you never know, do you?
No,
it's
goodness.
It's going to go, right?
Right. And couples, there's always, you meet a couple and you just love one of them and then it's a nightmare.
I know.
It can happen, yeah.
Exactly. But because of that right there.
Yeah.
It's acceptable.
Exactly.
Because there's a connection.
Yeah.
Right?
Totally.
I don't personally have any Libra, so I don't know, but there has to be some reason you actually get on with people, and it's all shown in the astrology.
Absolutely.
The ascendant is the strongest part in the chart. It's stronger than your sun, unless you've got a sun in Leo. Okay.
Right. Its own sign, yeah.
Yeah. But if you've got a sun Leo and something else rising, the sun will still be very strong.
Yeah.
But apart from that, hardly any other planet can beat down your ascendant. So bear that in mind.
Yeah. Oh, well, since you bring that up, it's an interesting thing with my ascendant being at 2 degrees Scorpio, which is exactly conjunct his sun. I mean, within minutes, I've got, I think it's 2 degrees six and his is 2 degrees eight. It's close.
It has to be. Otherwise, there is no point. You cannot, you walk into a room and you've got 10 possible people to talk to. Two you may talk to, two you will never speak to, and the rest could go either way.
Mm-hmm.
But the two you may talk to are triggering your chart.
Yeah. And when we met, it was very much like that. It was...
When you met him, you mean?
Oh, yeah. 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 The rest of the room proverbially melted away. It was very cinematic, Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh my god! And music played, did it? Yeah.
Well, it was crazy.
Love at first bite, you see.
Something like that.
Yeah, because you're connecting to his angles, you're connecting to the ascendant. What's your ascendant again? Remind me.
2 degrees Scorpio.
Oh yes, you just said.
Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah. So there you go.
Yeah.
What can I say? You're coming in the first house. It's classic. It's classic.
Yeah.
if it's no good just having your planets connecting, you do need the angles to connect to have established good solid relationship after. How many years? 15 odd years or whatever it is.
Yeah, almost
16. Your angles have to make a connection, otherwise you're wasting your time.
Mm-hmm.
This is by the way,
Yeah.
stuff like that.
Yeah.
But so that's kind of where I'm going to go, as far as I'm going to go with that. Yep. And
that's where to start with your chart.
Yes. And if someone would like me to have a look at their chart, they can email the details to accessastrology@gmail.com and we will get to it at our earliest convenience.
Definitely. Yeah. We would love to hear from you. And we will have this chart up there for your looking at it pleasure.
Exactly. So you can just, I don't know, you're going to put that on there. But
I would love to. That's it's got all your little handwritten notes and it's
scan
just
it
wonderful.
Or something clever.
Yeah, definitely.
I don't have to do that.
No, I totally will. That's wonderful.
Yeah, so you can certainly do that. And then on the back is the dispository. That's a subject for another conversation, the dispository, because that is a really interesting thing as well. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I thought I might just talk a little bit about moon placements as well.
Definitely.
Since he had the moon in Cancer, we said, didn't we?
Yeah.
Yeah,
definitely.
So I'm not talking about the moon as we're talking this month. I'm actually talking about something I wrote a couple of years ago about the moon, your mother, and food. Because the moon shows your mother in your chart and it also shows food.
Right.
Okay.
And things that comfort you, things that, yeah.
Yes. But actually food you consume and nurturing that your mother provided and how the food she provided is
set
shown
your
by your chart.
Patterns in life, yeah, totally.
Yeah, so it's a little bit of just going through each of the signs. So I'm just going to read them out and you can comment as we go,
certainly
right?
Certainly will.
So this is what each mother says depending where your moon is placed.
Okay.
So the moon in Aries mother says, eat it while it's hot, as she places a sizzling plate in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
I can attest to this. My mother had the moon in Aries, and the plate used to go shh as she sat it down. Things were still sizzling.
Goodness.
Yeah, the heat is in the food. Hot food is served.
Excellent.
Okay. If you have your moon in Taurus, your mother says, don't gulp your meal. Take your time and taste the food.
Mm-hmm.
Because for Taurus, it's everything's done slowly.
Yeah.
And you've got to taste. You've got to have taste in your food.
Yeah.
So if you've got, if you're going out with some guy who's got a moon in Taurus, he's actually going to want you to be able to cook. So you need to pay attention to that.
I'll stay away from that.
I mean, God, imagine. Anyway, so the moon in Gemini mother, drumming her fingers, says, hurry up and finish your dinner. I want the table for our jigsaw puzzle. She's not really interested in your... Hurry up. There it is. Move. We've got
the
things
more
to
interesting
do.
Things to move on to.
Yes. So that's how that goes. The moon in Cancer mother, as she pats your hand, says, I prepared your favorite recipe, so when you eat it, it will make me feel good. She feels good when you eat the food she has cooked.
Right.
Okay,
yeah.
So if your mother-in-law's got the moon in Cancer, you've got to compliment their cooking.
Mm.
You really have to. You have to make this connection.
Very important. Good to know.
Mm. If you have a moon in Leo...
Mm. Now, is this if you have or if she has?
No, if you have
in
your chart.
Excellent.
How's your moon?
Because your moon is
yes.
what your mother was to you. Your
That's
perception
right.
of your mother, yeah.
So if you have a moon in Leo, your mother dramatically says... Mm. I have created yet another culinary masterpiece in my kitchen. I have put my heart into the preparation of your meal. I hope you appreciate it. Eat up. That's Leo, right?
Excellent.
So,
and I must mention, I did the jazz hands when you said dramatically. For our podcast listeners out there.
Yes, yeah, so the moon in Virgo.
Moon in Virgo.
This is you, is it?
It is.
So the moon in Virgo mother, your mother, checking a packet of food values label, says, everything in this meal is healthy food, so clean your plate.
Mm-hmm.
And the comment was earlier, does that mean actually eat the food or wash it? And it really
and
means
both,
because that's the Virgo. That's what that's about.
Yep.
The moon in Libra mother, sitting opposite you, says, I'll make a deal with you. If you eat your veggies, we can have cake.
Excellent. Well done.
Because everything's done in pairs,
indeed.
Okay? The moon in Scorpio mother.
Oh, yes.
Whilst watching you closely, says, don't waste food. People in the world are dying of starvation. Eat up.
Oh.
Now, that is what we were taught as kids. As my mother said that to me. Clean your plate. You cannot leave the table until the plate is clean.
Excellent. Yeah. Yeah.
Those were the days. The moon in Sagittarius mother says, I'm trying a newfangled recipe. What do you think? Oh, please have some more. I made plenty. In fact, there is enough so I can take what's left to the big hall meeting later tonight.
Or the homeless shelter, as case may be.
Yes. So the person with the moon in Sagittarius, her mother just cooks acres of food.
Right.
And there's always food for plenty.
Something
of
new,
more.
Trying
yes.
a different thing, a different culture.
Continental cuisine.
Sure.
I know someone who's got Moon in Sagittarius, and he wants a different meal every night. The Indian, the Mexican, yeah. the Chinese. Oh. And I'm...
International cuisine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the Moon in Capricorn mother says, I'm tired of cooking you the same old meals every day, but tradition is tradition, so eat what I say. I am your mother, and therefore the food authority.
Warm and fuzzy, is that?
I know.
Oh, yeah.
So the Moon Aquarius mother standing at the door says, I have to dash out to my book club, but you can find something to eat, can't you? There's cold pizza in the fridge. And the Moon in Pisces mother softly says, I had to sacrifice to provide this meal. If you don't eat it, I will be upset. But I fed you only yesterday. The impression she gave you about food and your relationship with it.
Indeed.
Yeah. It also shows you, maybe for another day, that the type of food you like to eat, whether hot, cold, spicy, fish, beef,
right.
when you're Taurus, hamburgers, you know, this yeah. kind of thing. And it comes through. You see it all the time.
Definitely.
But it's anyway,
very interesting.
That's me.
Love that. They can find that article on starsology.com.
Yes,
well.
Yes, yes. Fantastic. You just link to the moon, your mother, and food.
All right. Well, we are going to move on to book reviews.
Yes.
Got a couple of quickie book reviews.
And... A couple of quickie ones, I think. I'm not sure how we're doing here. So the one I'm going to quickly review is a classic.
Classic. Everyone classic has it on their shelf.
Linda Goodman.
Yes.
Hear the roar of the crowd.
Indeed.
And the one I'm actually going to review here is Linda Goodman's Love Signs. This was her second book out. She first did Sun's Eyes. This is Love Signs, A New Approach to the Human Heart. Now, Linda Goodman, of all the astrologers ever, is the most well-known yeah. because her books are still in print after 30 years.
Yeah. And as one of my friends famously, at least in my life, famously, she said, this book... It's like the Bible of astrology. she said, after all of these years, we are still referring to this book. No one's written anything that replaces this book all this time.
Exactly. So.
Yeah. And people have written books, cookbooks about relationships, but
yes.
there's just something about that one.
So this is Love Signs. She does all the combinations of Aries Taurus, Aries Gemini, Aries Cancer. Works all the way through yeah. men and women.
Aries male with Taurus female.
Yes, it's fantastic. Yes. You read your stuff and
little
it opens
quotes from Peter Pan from the yes,
Alice in Wonderland. Alice Carroll, that's right.
Beautiful,
spectacular.
Quotes.
And if you get a chance to read it if you want to do relationship astrology, it really is a good solid book. Yeah. I know it's sometimes people laugh about it because it's not highbrow astrology, but yeah. it is still. I would call an entry-level book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. It's accessible, and it's got little nuggets of truth that are still, even though, I mean, some of it is a bit dated, some of the male-female roles are yes. a bit, you know, but in a charming bad way, you know, yeah. it's not insulting, it's not going to make you go, oh, Jesus, you
That's
know.
That's right. Yeah. So it's quite a big book, it's over 500 pages, but it's, if you can get a copy, do read it, yeah. Read your sign, see how you get on with people.
Several
and,
pages
yeah,
per
I recommend
combination.
It.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what book do you have for us, Arwen?
Well, similar theme, almost, Cosmic Love by Jan Spiller, and it's...
Oh, yes.
Yes, she has a few really nice... really helpful books out there. But this one I really enjoy because it all focuses on the North and South Nodes. The North Node, let's say. What each person is like towards others depending on their North Node placement.
Okay.
And so for each of the, like for example, I have Capricorn North Node, this whole chapter, all these different sections, your courage and leadership, your egocentric tendencies, your anxieties, your, you know, yes. in relationships and depending on the North Node. And then it also talks about where the North Node of someone else's falls in your chart.
Oh, yes.
So what house and then what that means, which is really interesting. And I've found, I've done that with not just people that you're in a relationship with, but people who you're friends with,
friends,
family,
and, so on.
And you can find where their nodes are in your chart. And it's really interesting to read about what that means.
Good.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's my recommendation. Cosmic Love. It's a bit of a misleading title because you can really analyze any kind of relationship.
Okay.
But yeah, Cosmic Love, it's a great book.
Great.
By Jan Spiller. Yeah.
That sounds good. Good. So I think that just about wraps that up this session.
Indeed. Yeah. Next time we will be talking about Aries.
Yes.
Zodiac starts again.
It all begins again.
It all begins.
The wheel turns.
Indeed. Yeah, so that's going to be in 2 weeks. And Axis Astrology is produced and recorded by Roger Aaron Toews, our chart subject of the day. I'm Arwen O'Neill.
And I'm Alison Price.
Thanks for joining us.
We'll see you next time.